Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everybody. It's a late night last night. We had a Power BI user group for the Chicago group. We led a webinar around that with Greg Baldini doing a whole bunch of interesting DAX hacks. Very fun. I learned a lot. And the way he presents is phenomenal. Very well thought out and a great presenter. So I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun.
I'm so happy we got him as a guest speaker, because that's, I said this on the user group. I'm like, that's one of those rare sessions that I'm on mute and talking to myself going, what? No, like you would be thinking I was watching like something about like the history of, I didn't know about. I was like, there's no way. Oh my gosh. It's, if you haven't watched it, Greg Baldini, the great Baldini, as he's also
known. The great Baldini.
He just, like I said, he sees the Matrix like Neo did, because he's going through how to cache in DAX Studio, or how to cache your DAX query, how to change it up, how to test. There's no good answer every single time, but how to debug it, really. Not necessarily get the right number, but to improve your time by like anywhere from upwards to like 60%. And just through these little things, and things you didn't know you could do with a variable. It's just, you're watching going, what? There's no book that says this either. This is the part I love. There's no article or book. It's literally just Greg at 3 a.m. testing something. So I loved it.
Yeah, good stuff. One of the things that stuck out to me last night was the ability for Greg to take something apart, and he needs to understand how it works. So a lot of times he spends time learning something by taking it apart, figuring out
deconstructs the whole underlying.
He says, I get it. You know, what gave it away to me a little bit was he was talking about how he sometimes is given a Power BI model, and he'll go through measures that are more complicated or slow, right? And he'll take those particular measures and just go to DAX Studio, take them all the way apart, and then just rethink how they could be redone faster in a better way. For me, it was a lot around, like, there's techniques that he's using that I was not aware of that were available to me. And so I'm not even exposed to thinking that way. So just having some, like, outside of the box creative thinking come across, and some, you know, documented, really solid examples of, you know, using things like, hey, if you want to do a sum of something, instead of doing like an if statement, you can use like a divide by zero or divide by itself, or there's other math functions that work really, really well, right, that changes how the tabular engine, you know, right, needs to scan or cache things inside the engine. And it makes a difference. So, you know, being able to pick out where those very slightly nuances are is very interesting, because, you know, if you have one query on a table, or one query that, on a measure that is saving you a couple milliseconds every time it runs, not a big deal when you have a small to medium data set. That's the advantage of the DAX engine. But when you start talking about tens or hundreds of millions of rows of data, those little calculation differences add up. I mean, that, looking for if statements, those are, so once you kind of know where to look for the performance pieces, you can actually start going at DAX code and saying, where does this look efficient? I should maybe check these areas, because there is something going on here in those particular areas where I may want to optimize things a bit more. So anyways, that was really cool.
Yeah, I will be watching that on half speed. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. And so, we got to get Greg to give us the materials so we can go publish those and put them on the
and bang our heads.
Well, I think we should, if nothing else, we should at least get a blog post out of it and just put some out there. Here's some great stuff. Here's some good content. Here's the links to all the materials, so that way we can refer to it later on, because it was good. I just thought it was really, really wonderful. Tommy, we've got if you like the Explicit Measures Podcast or swag stuff that Power BI Tips does, we're actually running a promotion right now, so we can get some free swag. Tommy, how can you participate in that?
Yeah, so we are doing a 100 contest, or I don't think we have a name for it. There's probably something more catchy, but we're getting near that 100 mark for episodes, which is absolutely bonkers when you think about, we just started last May. So what we want to do is thank everyone, and what we're doing for the 100th episode is going through basically what you guys liked, like what your favorite argument, favorite topic. So the way to contribute is between now and episode 100, post on LinkedIn and YouTube with the hashtag explicit measures, your favorite argument from the past 100 episodes, your favorite topic, your favorite tidbit or discussion or something Seth said that was mind-boggling, you know, change your life.
Yep.
Which anywhere from episodes like 17 to like 90.
Everything episodes. Calculated columns. I think I was, right. That was someone's favorite. Yeah.
Always use calculated columns.
Right, right. So, and basically every post or every topic that you kind of submit is a lottery ball. So we're giving away a lot of swag.
We're gonna do five giveaways for we're gonna do five, you know, pick right. people. And so the people who are publishing the most amount of content, we're gonna go after you guys first. And so you're right. gonna get some swag. So that's, you know, you have more opportunities to win from the pool of things that you submit.
Yep. So between now and I think it's like the middle of April, it's at some point next month.
Stay tuned for episode 100. We'll do the announcement.
You can do the math in your head, which apparently I can't
do math. love it. So yeah, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be a lot of fun. So go ahead and post your stuff out there. Remember the hashtag explicit measures, and just give us your favorite kind of content, favorite piece of the material that you're engaging with. With that, let's jump over today's topic, and I think this is a very relevant one. I have been talking with some other MVPs about this. And it's interesting to see the different perspectives of where people are typically comfortable living and what people use to do data stuff or data engineering. This topic's all around the modern data architecture. And I got to be honest, I was reading an article the other day. I'm not sure the modern data architecture is modern anymore. It's kind of becoming standard at this point. So we're going to have to come up with a new term. Where is this going to go into the future here? Tommy just pleasantly put down the link here. So this is kind of the topic or the article that we're talking about here, the trend in analytical data modeling. So Tommy, give us a kind of an overview for the article maybe and get some key points that you're thinking about here.
It's interesting you say what you said, that we need to think of another name. This article just came out March 16th this year.
I was reading another one that said, you know, so the pattern here is processing is moving into the cloud. Everyone's using like a form of like data lakes at some level. And, you know, it's becoming very common that this is happening. So what happens next? Like what's
right.
You know, this, we've been calling this the modern data platform. Well, it's here. People are doing it. They're putting it in place. So is it now the standard? Is it becoming the standard? Is there a new term? What will happen in the next 5 years? Is there going to be a different right. trend that's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for the podcast listeners themselves, this is on Iteration Insights. And the article we're talking about is the trend in analytical data modeling.
Good call. Clarifying.
You can find the link in the podcast description. It does not exist.
Yeah, Tommy will put that in the description. Yeah. And it's in the chat window for those who are on YouTube. And we'll drop it over on LinkedIn as well if you want to follow along and just kind of read some highlights right. of what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest part of this that stood out to me is, again, part of the background is before, if you were to do data warehousing, if you were doing data architecture, you were in IT. You probably were not front-facing with the business. You know, you had a guy who talked to a guy who talked to a guy who talked to you to what to do. And then you just built that SSIS, you know, maybe a little cloud modeling, but it was such a, I don't want to say disconnect from the business, but it was so much of these other processes that you had to do. The trend here is with everything going to the cloud and also becoming, dare you say, easier to do with Databricks. Like I've actually myself just started really getting into that. Just because again, we've talked about Power Platform or Azure. I'm like, well, why can't I could learn both? So learning Databricks, like, oh man, like, you know, like it's intuitive. Compared to like, you don't have to code as much. So it's really talking about the one of the big parts here is the analytical data models for the business and it's for business users more and more. And I think that's kind of one of the points here. So it's very intriguing to say, to build a warehouse or do an architecture as a business user.
I think this article or in thinking through this article, we have been talking a ton about people, process, and technology. We kind of brought that up a couple podcasts ago. And I feel like that we're going to hit on, I can already sense, right? I can already sense what some topics here around this area where we're going to kind of lean on like people, process, and technology pieces here. One of the things I think is a very common theme that we do on the podcast is we talk a lot about how the people handle, like the people and the process part of this. There's a lot of people management and how do you handle expectations and grow the team analytically. There's a lot of interesting concepts there that we talk a lot about. And right. and yes, it aids with technology, but man, I feel like this is another area where we're going to hit on those topics as well. So let's talk about maybe what is like traditional or current data architecture. Let's just frame out the topic here a little bit, right? We talk about the first part of the article talks about, you know, cloud-based tools are changing the game for organizations. And I want to just kind of comment on this one. As a consultant, as a person who was working for a consulting firm that actually did this, or helped companies move from on-prem to in cloud, if you think about it, there's kind of a, what I saw, here's a trend that I saw, and again, I'd be YouTube chat, if you want to jump in here, feel free to add some comments as well, and we'll pick them up. But I feel like there's a moment in time, excuse me, for organizations that when they are ready to reinvest, right, when the SQL servers, when the on-prem servers are getting of a certain age, the company has to make a decision. Are we ready to drop another couple million dollars to reinvest into more servers because we have to upgrade our aging environment? Or do we kind of make a decision to go into the cloud? And so I feel like a lot of decision points for organizations that I worked with was they were at that moment where they've had servers for a number of years, 5 to 10 years. Those servers have been paid off. They are getting old. They're running out of room, and they're looking for more space to consume what they're trying to do. And so they're looking for a faster way to innovate. And so one of the opportunities they have is to move their data into cloud platforms because in some cases, a lot of these organizations are already using a lot of data from the cloud, from other systems, Google Analytics, something from AWS. And what happens is when you go to that software as a service method, it's kind of easier to keep the data inside the cloud somewhere as opposed to having to bring all of it back down to on-prem. And there's a lot more data being made. So you have to have, you're spending more for larger SQL servers or larger servers to compute all this stuff. So I feel like the trend I'm seeing right now is people just say, let's just keep it. We already have data coming from the cloud. Let's keep it there. Let's figure out how to make that work. So I think that's my first point here is talking about like, we're talking about, I think the trend of servers on-prem versus storing data and doing data processing in the cloud. Thoughts on that, Tommy, Seth, what do you guys see there for trends? And is the cloud really changing the game in that?
So this is actually something I do want to ask both you guys, because I've seen from my own experience where you have people show on-prem and it's one of those, tell me the true benefits. We have someone that does SSIS. We have someone who runs packages and they're great at it. And there's no issues. There's no, in a sense, there's no complications. Things don't break. So why would I need to just go to the cloud for the sake of it? I obviously think a lot of companies are seeing the benefits, but I guess where's that cutoff point where it all of a sudden becomes, hey, like this is where the whole company needs to go? Because especially if you already have, I think it's the role, right? And I think that's kind of the crux of the question. If you have people who are SSIS pros and been doing that for years, right? Is it just a change of skill? Because you're just going to keep the skill to do, you know, in a sense to run the engine. And if your engine's still a Toyota from 2004, it still works.
Yeah, I guess we're starting, right? If we're going to look at modern data architecture, right? Storage, processing, transformation, ETL, and then models, right? So sure. if we're in the where do you want to put your data, right? So to your point, Mike, you see a lot, I think, of companies migrating off of physical hardware into the cloud, but you can do that in many different ways, right? Sure. You can still have the infrastructure as a service type, you know, where it feels and acts like on-prem, and you still have SSIS and you still have all the, you know, things that you're used to, because realistically it's just the VM in the cloud instead of a virtual machine or something on hardware. And the benefit there is you can scale pretty easily, right? You don't have to have and maintain servers in a physical location, disaster recovery in multiple physical locations. Like, yeah. Man, talk about a nightmare a lot, like not having to support individuals that just support the machines that support your data, right? Like that's one of the biggest benefits, I think, of the cloud.
Yeah.
In general, now that people are over the fear of, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's in the cloud. Yeah, but it's in many cases more secure than your servers that were in a physical location.
That was a really good talking point. We used that a lot because it was like, well, what version are you on? And have you done all the service patches? It takes time and effort to do that. And if something breaks your internal infrastructure, right? If you put a service pack in that breaks something, your server's down for a couple of days. And like, people can't have that. They can't have access to data for days now. That's not appropriate.
Yeah. That is,
So when we start talking about like analytical data models for business, Tommy, or another reason of like, do you make big shifts into the cloud in services, right, or SaaS services for your data, as opposed to the way you store it and things like right now, are, I think, mainly driven when you need to consolidate data from multiple different systems. That's challenging to do, right? Like if you have an architecture where you have multiple different components of the company, all these things are siloed in different systems. It's a pain in the butt to get data from one place to another. Like that's where the cloud simplifies this. And there's many different tools you can use to, you know, flatten, store, merge the data. And then things really take off though, because then, you know, yes, you're rebuilding ETL. Yes, you're having to learn new skills and new tools, but things start to really, you know, accelerate as it relates to some of the data connection points that you can make just from a raw data perspective. Right. So like to take this like full circle, I also think one of the biggest things that we can dive into today when we're talking about like, you know, the model itself is like, why I think it's still a relevant conversation is because we're still peeling people forward into just how much things have changed in the last 5 years. And I think Power BI is that tool that is
just going to go there,
is pushing that change. Because if you think about like some of the fundamental radical changes of business intelligence, it's business couldn't access these tools, right? Like data warehouses were built because systems behind the scenes had to be performant. They had to be structured in the right way. You had to, you know, clean, curate data, give full views of information to the business. But there were a lot of technical, like back end IT challenges that are limitations related to, you know, the space, the tools, the performance. And I think one of the points in here too is business didn't have access to these tools. Like you had to have Visual Studio and the tool sets behind the scenes in order to access these SQL databases or wherever your data was stored. You couldn't create a tabular model. They would have no idea how to interact with this thing. And now you introduce solutions to these, which is cloud-based services and storage. You have Power BI, which basically provides business users an avenue into the tool sets that they didn't have access to in a way that they understand, but the underlying structure behind them are the enterprise tools. And that's what's been so cool, I think, for all of us to be part of Power BI from the beginning. And where it's been is they started, the best decision they made was plugging into these enterprise tools instead of trying to rebuild the underlying systems. And over the course of the years have just built behind the scenes the infrastructure of those enterprise tools better and better and better, to the point where they're more preferred in some cases than, you know, the harder to work with tool sets that we've had in the past. And I think this whole swath of, you know, change and tool sets and releasing of limitations and increasing of data is why this is still a very relevant topic and conversation, because there's some core tenets that of modeling that still persist, but how we implement these things, I think, can vary so greatly in this kind of brave new world where we have a lot more options, you know, depending on data sizes and company needs.
So you raise a critical point, I think, to this evolution and again to that relationship to what Powers BI has done for the business intelligence side. And it's very much so the modern company requires the modern architecture, because if you're still dealing with systems from 20 years ago, not necessarily SSIS, but your connection points, well, then SSIS kind of proves it. But most companies now are plugging into so many different sources. Like your web analytics, your cloud analytics, all these other little points of reference that kind of become a breaking point in terms of, we have all these, and Mike, you've talked about this a thousand times, but every time it rings true. Companies are getting more and more data from more and more places at a rapid rate. And that's where all of a sudden that cloud becomes a breaking point. So I love that. I think that's the critical threshold here. And then that other side, I love that the similarities with Power BI. Think about what business intelligence was 10 years ago, and think about what the business user can do now in Power BI. It's not just build a report. It's build a data model you can build multiple reports on. Think about that flow. Think of data flows in Power BI and that own, in a sense, business user ETL that's available. Then all of a sudden, IT could kind of control, they can control, but they don't have to, in a sense, worry about. Like, that could literally come from someone who reads a few Microsoft documents, who just started in Power BI and then can create these. That's all the education they need to do that. Because, like, I just want to connect to this SharePoint folder because we have a bunch of stuff in here. I want to create a data flow. And now that is their ETL, and that is something that the whole, in a sense, BI team can connect to. We take that for granted because it's here, so we think it's been around, but something like that was never possible. You would have to get IT involved or something to be able to iterate over multiple Excel files, or the ability to just connect to a web API. How easy that is to create a data model off of. Think about 10 years, even 7 years ago, when Power BI just came out, that ability to do so. So the company's evolution too, and I and people and technology, but the people involved, what people's roles are, like, hey, we have a social media team, we have this team reaching out here, all these different roles in a company are different data sources that require these transformations. So I love both points here.
There's a couple points you made there, Seth, that I was trying to feverishly write down my notes here on things you were saying. One of the things I think that's a game changer for here, why the cloud is so different. So a couple things I've observed, especially early on in the Power BI days where I was working with organizations that were just starting out in Power BI, there is this hesitation for organizations to get to the cloud, just in general. Is it secure? Am I ready to go? Is it something that we need to do? And I was reading a lot of papers, like a lot of CTO level individuals were like, yeah, we want to get there. We know it's on our radar. We're thinking about it. But Power BI changed the game to some degree, because that was an all online tool that the business users were able to easily get themselves into, easily to use and consume. And so what Microsoft did very wisely here was they introduced something called like the economies of scale, right? Mm-hmm. When you're in Power BI Pro, you're not getting your own little computer. You're not getting your own little compute. You're actually taking your data model and you're putting it into a bucket of machines that Microsoft has made. And so Microsoft says, look, I can run one mega machine cheaper than you can run your own individual SQL server with a CPU core. So this is where like the whole advantage of like, okay, how much load can one person produce inside our servers? And oh yeah, we can charge them $10 a month and still make money on that person based on the servers they're providing into that cloud. And so it turned into this whole idea of economy of scales at this point. And so I think that's another moment here where whenever you can take a multi-tenant architecture and boil it down to many people can use the same infrastructure, this is also where Microsoft improved their performance by going to Power BI Gen 2. Their Power BI Gen 2 allowed them to go even more larger at scale, bigger machines, P3s, type size machines, to be able to handle more load for these data models. So when you think of the things that Microsoft's doing in the back end, there are some really big technology leaps, I feel like, that enabled companies to get comfortable with cloud because they saw Power BI was fast, reports were quick, I could see them on mobile, desktop, I could see them on anywhere I wanted, and they were like, this is secure. I see the security controls. And that's one of the points that Microsoft will continually point out is, if you look at Microsoft and compare the security profiles of what they do with data versus other companies in the data space, for the same price, you cannot compete with Microsoft. Their Active Directory and how they secure data is leaps and bounds cheaper than any other data security thing in the cloud.
Yeah. I mean, you can't beat the level of security and access to things now that like they put the Power BI service in Azure.
Yeah. Right?
Like Azure AD, access control, totally. Like all of the things that you pretty much now have within Power BI and its connections and everything.
Correct.
So yeah. I think the other thing to point out here though, that Power BI is really the tool that, and I agree, did change the game, because the old way was essentially business being stuck using their own devices,
Excel,
right? Which
access
Excel
databases,
or access databases, yeah. Right? Like,
yep.
Why the access database? Because it allowed them to use more data that they couldn't fully access within Excel.
Exactly right.
Right. So realistically, as we talk about all of the things like perfectly built models, dimensions, facts, like all of the things that are still absolutely relevant in large scale models and reporting and all of those things, it's still very valid. Mm-hmm. None of that underlying infrastructure has changed.
Correct.
But even as the chat's kind of going, the democratization of data that Power BI opened up to the end user, where you could have millions of rows of data.
Yeah.
Right. And you behind the scenes opened up these tool sets that were not available to business, is why it's had such a big impact. The other thing though is it allows the business to iterate. Okay. And I think that's my point, would be my point back to like Thomas Iverson, right? Like he posted in a YouTube chat to challenges. Build analytical solutions based on dirty, fragmented data or with high degree data quality and consolidated data modeling. He's bringing up some real valid concerns that are BI professional concerns. But if we think about what are the most important things to the business, why are they going through and building reporting? It's to get insights. It's to make decisions based on data that are going to be the right ones that propel the business in the right direction. This is why reporting is valuable. What these tools allow the business user to do is start to get those answers and then quickly identify where there might be challenges or issues in the data that we need to fix. So if you think about all of the things that were behind the scenes, like you had a business user saying, I need these reports, and IT saying, I need 6 months to go build this warehouse to produce this for you.
Mm-hmm.
Business can say, I've built this report. Here are the challenges with it. It's horrible, right? There is no model behind here. It looks like garbage. It performs slowly now that data is going in there. But what we do know is this is the value.
Here's
this
the start.
Is the thing.
Here's the
and
ending
we talked
of the data
a lot
tables,
about like
yeah.
the transition of like a business built report where somebody may not know much about BI going through a process in mm-hmm. an organization
yep.
through building a better data culture, adoption roadmap, all of these pieces of governance that we've talked about. How do you pass that along up the chain to the point where what was built is very relevant in solving business problems? And now it's IT's job or the business intelligence professional to take that and make it a solid back end, because right now, or the current state is not desirable and it won't scale. And
right.
before you share it with the wider organization, you do want to go through those data cleansing efforts and make sure that you're building facts and dimensions in the right way, so you have the right performance and all that. But I think that's, to me, one of the most significant shifts in modern data architecture
yep.
or reporting that Power BI opens the door to, is you're bringing business into the conversation and giving them immediate value much, much sooner than they had it in the past.
Yes.
So guys, and let's just take a moment to something you said, Seth, and give homage to where it's due to Access. That played a role at one point.
these tools
not really, because it was horrendous.
Well, it was a great tool to help you write like something. That's how I learned a lot of MySQL initially, was going in through
really?
Access and playing around with there and seeing like I could literally grab relationships between tables. I could grab some columns from each table. and it would auto-generate me some SQL statement. That was my kind of my first interaction with SQL. So I'm not saying that it's a bad tool. I mean, there's definitely use cases for it. But I mean, I think the tooling has now changed and people have outgrown that to some degree, right? So I feel like the technology has gotten better. And so I feel like I don't think I would choose Access anymore, because I feel like all the needs that I would be able to do from a modeling standpoint could be handled by Power BI now. So the tooling changed. Yeah. But it still served a purpose for what it needed to be at the time.
And I think there's two very intriguing points to our conversation today. One being the intuitiveness of the product, and where, again, a business user can, I said something in the chat, which kind of ignited a little, we'll call backlash, but a little disagreement on the business user and IT. But I'm very much in the opinion, one, because if I could learn what a star schema is, and I'm not very smart, then a business user could too. Mm-hmm. But the tool itself is pretty intuitive to learn, where you can get the basic understanding of what a star schema is, what a good data model is. It's not necessarily that complex if you don't have something complex, but you can build it yourself in Power BI. There's not a lot of coding. You can drag and drop. There's the click, you know, or do something in data flows, which does not require a ton of years of experience to do. Mm-hmm. Like Access, we tried to build something in Access years ago, and it was frustrating as all get out. One, to find the education for it, the training for it, so to acquire the skills in that tool. That's not as much of a barrier. And I think that's the word I was trying to say. There's not really a barrier to entry into the Power BI space.
That's by design. I mean, you listen to the Microsoft team. It's like, you know, 5x5 is their mentality, right? 5 seconds to understand and see how it works, and then 5 minutes to wow, like, oh, I got something working here.
Right.
Like, so the tool is by design easy to get in started, easy to get your first moment of like, wow, this actually did something valuable to me right away. Great. I can invest more time into this. I could see how you make that. But you're making the point, I think, Tommy, you're making the point here. Like, the value of here is how quickly can I go from a need to an answer? And Microsoft made the initial look at Power BI Desktop very fast.
Right.
Get in, load some data. Okay, that was intuitive. Boom. All right. Wow, I've got a table. Great. Drag, drag, drag. Boom. Visual. Wow. Okay, 5 minutes. I've got something that can tell me something about my information, my data.
And 2 weeks you might have, a data model.
Yep.
So,
and the critical part,
and then
you're
7 years later, you actually start really learning DAX with Greg Baldini.
Yeah.
So I want to make a point here, because Tommy, I don't like the way you responded in chat, where you disagreed in the merge. You think the merging of the business user and IT in the Power BI space is shrinking. I disagree with that.
Okay.
I think the barriers are no longer there that allow a business user to get into the IT space. But I think what we're doing is we promote and try to show people that there's this path, and there's tons of training. And this is why the Power BI community is fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have so many people providing technical knowledge to users of Power BI that if they're coming from the business and they're Excel users, right? And they're trying to solve their business problems more and more and more and more, and have that kind of inclination to learn how to, you know, utilize Power BI to their advantage, then they're going to go down this route where they become more technical, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But those are like personal choices of employees and individuals. And I would say the barrier to go from 5 minutes to wow type of interaction with Power BI to Greg Baldini DAX is there, man. Like, no, it is so smooth, and you can go through these tools and the tool set supports it, and you don't need to go any through anything else. And like, that alone is just such a unique tool set, you know, that it offers you all of these different options. But I don't know how many people in the business realm are taking that. Is it a lot more than in the past? 100%, because the barrier is no longer there that divides business and IT so directly and didn't allow them to do that. But there are like significant differences between BI professionals like us and business users.
And, right? And that, yes,
I agree.
To that point, I completely 150% agree. I think my point of view, so to speak, is unlike 10 years ago where you wanted to get into the data space, the education alone you needed to start was already high. You had to know SQL, or, you know, you had to have that experience in SSRS, and you had to know a lot of technical background. You had to have that experience just to get in, just to put one foot in the door.
You would go study information technology, and that would be your class. You would go get like a degree in that space, and that would be where you started from.
Forget being an expert,
But I agree with Seth though. I feel like there's now more of a spectrum. So the technology, I can hear people process technology again, right? The technology is shifting now away from tools that have been traditionally only held by IT individuals. Hey, we're going to write everything in code. And there are certain people that are just like, I don't want to write a code. That's not my thing. And as soon as you start putting user interfaces around them, GUIs around them, Power Query being a great example, right? Mm-hmm. It's writing code for you, but I click buttons and data shows up and I can see what's happening. The more you provide that user-friendly user interface to data, and there's a lot of tools out there that do a lot of data transformations with graphical interfaces, which is great. Well, but by doing that, you're now giving a larger audience more ability to figure out how to do things, and they're not having to write code.
Right.
So I think I think this is what we would all observe here. The more we move towards this, the technology gets better. There's less code, right? And so the trend Microsoft is putting on their eggs in their basket about is less code, more power, right? It's all these power platform type tools, automate things, write stuff, do a little bit of code, but then be very powerful because it's a graphical interface in how you program things. So, I mean, I watch my son program. He uses a program called Scratch, which is a graphical programming. I mean, when I was a kid, I had a TI-89 and I wrote whatever language was on there and I would build my games on a calculator, right? And then he has a whole UI in front of him where he's just grabbing blocks of code. Here's a for loop, zoop, drag it on the page. That wrote the code for the for loop. What do I want to do in that for loop? Here's grab these little blocks and they snap in there. It's like this whole realm of like how we interact with code now, I think is in changing.
Yeah.
And it's making it more accessible to more people, I feel like.
Yeah, I was trying to hack Oregon Trail. And if I wanted to play F-13, I had to go into DOS and actually type in F-13 fighter jet. But yeah, mm-hmm. So things have obviously changed to
totally.
Now I can just download like NBA 2K on my phone or whatever.
Yes.
Like a full, anyway, but I think my point, and again, I completely agree with everyone we're saying, but one thing I don't think you can argue with is my simple star schema published to the service is just as much of a Tabular model as a business user's simple star schema that they publish. Mm-hmm. So there's no band-aid, like they're not compromising, or it's not a band-aid solution, so to speak, of it's kind of an analysis service. No, it's the same model, the same engine running it, which is crazy that anyone can download the desktop and have that same power underneath.
I think the difference becomes here is, you know, when you look at a model that's made by an expert and you look at a model that's made by someone new, right? Where do you see the differences around this one? And like both of them are adding value, right? And mm-hmm. this is dovetailing into a lot of our conversation last night when we were on the user group afterwards, but this is a kind of an idea of like last night I brought up the article around Javan's paradox. Javan's, yeah. I don't remember how to say it. Javan's paradox. Anyways, I'll get a link to it or something like that. I'll drop it in here. But that paradox explains how coal. It was a coal analogy, right? If we make it more efficient to use coal, or create it, more people will consume it. So they were thinking, well, if we just use coal more efficiently, we'll have people less using it, right? That wasn't the case. The cheaper and more efficient you make it to produce something, the more people will consume it. So this is the same case here with like Excel, right? Excel was this easy to use. Everyone has it. All you have to do, it's free. It's in every company buys it. You get it by default. Boom, ready to go. Productive. Right. So then because it was available to everyone, Excel files just got everywhere. Everyone uses it. It's a staple in the business. And I think we're seeing the same thing for Power BI now, where It's becoming like a commodity that is becoming easier and cheaper to use. And so more and more people are using it. And you're going to have a lot of this, like, to your point, Tommy, there's going to be a lot of self-service things in Power BI that are okay. And they may be junk, but they serve a purpose for a person. They may serve, like, they may not be the best design model. But as you, the challenge, I think, becomes is, how do you look at the landscape of all the reports and models that have been created and pick the best ones to promote into something that is governed?
Yeah. So the last kind of piece I'll say to this, or the crux of my argument, is this. Before, if you wanted to get into this space, you had to dive into the water. But now a lot of more of the iceberg showing up.
Yes.
So a business user can get into it. There's still obviously a lot that, if you want to say you're a skilled professional in it or doing it the right way and that's actually providing value, you got to still dive into the water. But there's still a lot. There's a lot more showing up just to get started, where before it was deep underwater. So, And I think that's where that merge is occurring, both in the Azure side, which I'm learning more, but I think especially in the business intelligence Power BI side.
Yes.
So moving kind of away into the transitional space of like the actual article, right? Where we're like heavy on the heavy on the architecture parts, right?
Yep.
Like, where does it make sense, right? Because the article is using different tooling than I'm familiar with, but there are challenges in, you know, kind of taking, or I should say, what are your thoughts around taking structured data in databases and throwing them back into files to unwind them a bit later down the stream, right? Because like what I'm reading through some of these charts in the lake house is storing things in files, and that presents its own challenges, especially with, you know, refreshing of data or modification of things, and then, you know, outputs that it's a different set of challenges depending on the tooling you're using. And I'm not familiar with all of the toolings, but, you know, what's the bent you guys have on, you know, taking very, very structured data in databases and throwing it up into file storage to, you know, then flatten it out again?
Well, so that's a really good point. And here, I have spent a ton of time kind of chewing through this. And I think it's the medium of how it's being implemented, right? There's a lot of, and again, I lean on a lot of the Databricks. I feel like Databricks is leading the helm in this in a lot of ways. But you have a SQL database. You have information in there. You need to get it to your lake at some level. Lakes pretty much run on files or flat files.
Sure.
The advantage here, though, is I think, and this is one of the things that I think is why the lake is so important now, is because the lake can now use those flat files in tables.
Many other ways.
Many other, like, so there's a framework on top of those flat files. So I worked at a Fortune 100 company for a number of years, and when I was there, they had a data lake. And to use it, you had to have permissions, you had to run Hadoop, it was very technical, it was very IT. They would put a lot of data in, and they had to be very groomed, and they still had the bronze, silver, gold layers of data, but they had to figure out how to update. There was a lot of work around, if I want to update records in a table, it was a pain. It was very difficult for them to figure out where do they put the information, and then how do they, you know, it's these common problems, right? I have slowly changing dimensions, right? A record is going to update itself. How do I keep that record updated in my lake? That's a problem. And so what I feel like is happening in these modern technology tools is the operational systems have to be SQL based to some degree. It has to be, you could lock out a record. I can update things. That's just the way those systems are built still. And, you know, that's how they run. When you get that data to the lake side, now it becomes incredibly cheap for you to store it. And so now there's infrastructure on top of it that enables users to be able to easily figure out, okay, is this a slowly changing dimension table? How do I get the current record? You put in a different pattern. So even though you're using flat files, there's an abstraction layer above that that makes it easier for you to manipulate those files into tables, which is ultimately what we want, right? We need to be able to reliably grab information and make a completed table at the end of the day. And I think I don't see any problem with this, because now all that's doing is separating the compute and the storage layer into two discrete buckets. Everything goes into the blob store as files. That's how you store the data. And then these compute things that are very scalable, you can throw lots of machines at things. So that's different than what we've been doing in the past with SQL servers, because they were typically constrained to one machine on-prem. I can throw 50 machines at a problem and eat it very quickly, and then turn all the machines off and not pay for them anymore. And I think that to me is like the next level up here. Yes, we're dealing with a lot of flat files, but those flat files enable hyperscale. And you see other systems like in the healthcare industry called Epic, huge program, always used flat files, never did anything else but flat files. That's all, that everything is like runs on CSV files. So when you looked at the very early databases, if you read up on this, all the original databases used flat files. And they would just access and manipulate those flat files in those original databases. And then only when they found optimizations around putting the compute and storage inside a SQL server, then you see them moving away to proprietary storage systems and all this other kind of stuff too. So I think the ability to take computers and commoditize them to read and write and store data has been revolutionary for this industry. Hadoop and Spark have changed why we do what we do now. That's my opinion. Tommy?
Yeah, I'm going to cop out and...
You're like, yeah, ditto.
I'm gonna quote something from the article and just cop, like, and act like it's mine. But I think to your point, but I think that evolution side is really much on things just change quicker now, or the needs change quicker now. So this is the last blurb in the article, which I think was one of the reasons why I said I think we should talk about this. Or when I mentioned it to you guys, you're like, yeah, let's talk about this. Like, business changed faster today than they did in the past. You know, the traditional enterprise architecture cannot keep up with that pace of change. And, you know, for the new architecture means we must change how we data model. And you can say you can just substitute data model for Power BI. We need to change the data model frequently and cheaply. Using files stored in a data lake allows us to keep pace.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's that ability to adapt. And I think we see this all the time. Like, hey, we're using this. Okay, now we're switching to this. Or, you know, there's new, that pace and frequency, one, is part of that democratization because you can do it. You know, it's not like it's a 6-month or 3-month process to kind of incorporate something new into the process.
Yes.
You can do it in a day.
Or a couple of days, yes.
Or a couple of days, yeah. So we'll do the couple of days for the consults. We don't want to put any expectations out there. So give it a week.
Give it a week.
5 to 10 business days. But still, I mean, that frequency to adapt is, again.
This is what cloud affords you. Cloud right. Lets you innovate faster. And that was a selling point that Seth and I used a lot when we were talking about selling people cloud architectures, and particularly Power BI. We're like, you guys can go build your own custom reporting. You can put 5 visuals in the page, but you have to, like, then we show them, like, hey, build the interactivity. Hey, tell your developers to go build interactivity. When I click this bar chart, that other chart filters. And just to tell your team to go build that, just a Power BI report, not even, you know, embedding it in your application, whatever, right? Just doing that, you're talking weeks or months of time, of development time, to figure that out. And then you have to make it fast, right? So this is where I think Power BI really excels here. Excels. Where Power BI shines here really well is because it just does a lot of this stuff that you would normally have to build anyways out of the box. It solves so many hard, challenging problems because the tabular model is so robust. I love that comment. I agree with you, Tommy. I think that's a really good point.
So I would say a data lake architecture and moving to the cloud for analytics makes a lot of sense for companies that have a very rapid growth of data, companies that have disparate data sources that are challenging to merge together.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you build those pipelines and you start file storage, like, then you can do anything you want with those files, right? Like,
exactly.
And then you can switch services. You can switch the way you want to do things. Yep. And that affords a lot of flexibility within an organization. Mm-hmm. And there's some setup there. Yep. But once you have those pipelines running, the value of being able to join data sets together, albeit they're not, you know, relational in like a SQL database perspective where you have constraints and keys and things tying those tables together, but insights into data and then building out facts and dimensions, data marts, whatever in the lake in different ways is essentially the same, right? Yes. You're doing the same transforms, correct, you know, on-prem, yep, ETL, et cetera. I would caution though that like this article makes it sound like everything's cheaper. And while storage is immensely cheaper,
compute is not.
In files, you've got to be really cautious, yes, around the processing. And because that's where you're going to end up spending a lot of your money.
Correct.
And you can, like, with any Azure AWS service, I'm sure is the same, but I'm familiar with Azure. Any Azure service, right? You spool something up, you're going to pay for it.
Money's, you know? That's why.
And the larger those volumes, you know, it's something that has to be taken into consideration. Because yes, the storage, absolutely, bar none, cheaper. But if processing has to be on all the time for, you know, Power BI to access something, you're not going to pay for that if you're just connecting to a SQL server.
Correct.
Right. You're paying for
the SQL front
instance, right, and the storage, right? Yeah. But in other methods, you have to have clusters running. You have to have things that are costing you money. And depending on your solution, if that's just Power BI where you're refreshing an hour a day or something, cool. Like, it's still probably going to be a lot cheaper. But it there's a lot more to it, you know, when you're shifting large, big, you know, initiatives into cloud services versus something on-prem.
And I'm going to make a comment here to Darian, you know, talking about Power BI Premium starting at $5,000, that's not really where Power BI Premium starts. And so,
no,
you know,
not at all.
Not anymore. So, you know, Power BI Premium is a premium P1 SKU is where Microsoft will tell you where Premium starts. That's not where Premium starts for Power BI. It actually starts at an EM SKU at $650 per month. So, I mean, it's a much lower price input point where you can actually get engaged with Power BI at a premium level. But one thing I want to note here, Seth, for you is around, like, I really like your comment there. But one trend I think I'm seeing, and particularly around Power BI, is I think we're seeing Microsoft acknowledge this. Seth and I have gone back and forth about this architecture a lot. We have these lakes. We have these tables. It's ready to go. Why the heck do I need a SQL Server up? Or why do I need a Databricks cluster up to touch and connect to my data? And I think Microsoft has heard this. And I think you're going to start seeing in the near future Microsoft adjusting how you access data level lake stuff, because every MVP I talk to who's in lakes and building lake things is we need more access down to the raw level of information, and we don't want to be pulling up a bunch of SQL servers just to go connect to the data. So this is one of the reasons why I absolutely love Synapse, is because yes, you have to process the data through these bronze, silver, gold layers, but you can do it in a much more cost-effective way. And this is where I, you know, you'll lean on the business requirements, right? I was just in a conversation the other day. They're like, we need to have the data loaded every hour. And then I said, no.
I want it every 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, but the question was, we want it every hour. And I said, why do you need it every hour? That's just added cost, because you're going to be reprocessing the same data over and over again. For why? And then I said, tell me what is the requirement here? Like, oh, it's for development because we want to see the file show up quicker, or we want to see the data show up quicker. I'm like, that's not what we want then. Let's start. So in cloud, we don't do that. We start with the largest time frame that's acceptable, and we work our way slower or faster, you know, narrow that time frame down. So we started with like a much larger number, like 12 hours. We're going to process everything every 12 hours. And then if you need development things to happen, we'll give you an on-demand kind of, you know, push this button, it will go kind of thing. That way you can kind of on demand it every so often. But I mean, very often you don't need data to be processed as frequently as people think they do. And even the data you get from systems isn't really even that updated, right? Why process every hour of the day if you're only getting the latest data as of yesterday? Doesn't make sense. So yeah. Optimizing that compute layer is highly, highly improved. And then I think if I look at what Microsoft's doing, a lot of the PM team from Power BI moved over to Synapse. And what is Synapse? Synapse is now this data layer for everything, right? Power BI is no good without lots of data behind it. I think they're going to continually push this ball in that direction. And you're going to continually see improvements and speed and ease of access from Power BI right into your lake side of things. I think it's going to be better and better.
Great. I mean, it, the nice thing is it's already doing it, right?
Like, yeah.
There are a lot. You spoke to premium, and we heavily use,
yeah,
you know, the enterprise features of premium.
Yep.
But the thing you have to think about in when you're paying even the P1,
yep,
or, you know, if you want to engage in that, is you're getting
a lot,
like an amazing array of storage technology, like all of the things on the back end that go along with that. It's, mm-hmm, not just like, oh, hey, people don't need a license on the front end. It's like, yeah, that's the easy button, but like, my goodness, right? If you're utilizing the full storage capacities on every single data set, like up to 50 gig on a P1, I think is,
yeah,
yeah,
big,
you know, that's per data set.
Yeah.
Like with the new Gen 2.
Crazy.
Mind-boggling the value of that license now.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get your guys' prediction, because we always like to do this, on this kind of conversation from the people, the process, technology. What does this look like in 3 years for kind of all those components? Is there more of, in my head, the merge of business user being able to, like, more of the iceberg is going to show? Is there going to be more adoption from other users that are not in IT? Is the technology just going to be easier and easier to use? Where do you see those, the people, process, technology kind of playing into this space?
Yeah, I think it just gets easier. If you think about some of the cloud technologies, Mike, to your point, back, mm-hmm, in the day,
yeah,
you know, they built a big data warehouse, like cloud accessible data access sets, and like they had to manually build all that. Mm-hmm. They manual, like Hadoop, all the different components. And now what can you do? You go out to Azure and spool up a service.
Yeah.
Right. Like, mm-hmm, I want data in it. Okay. Like, go over to Azure Data Factory, connect to something, pump it into my lake. It's there. Boom. Now I have access to it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like all of these big data technologies are behind easy buttons. And I think what Power BI already does is it opens that door, and it just allows, you know, more of easy, accessible things to scale in certain ways that we haven't been thinking about. So I think what I'm seeing is the enterprise pieces, Power BI is already plugging into the Azure backends with the backups and restores. Like, there's a lot of connection that's happening in the cloud space with the enterprise tooling and everything else. And I think they're just going to make it easier for us, make it easier to plug into a service. And, you know, it's an amazing sales model, but it's also an amazing value to a business, in that you remove all those barriers that we are talking about right now, which is, mm-hmm, how do you scale things up, or how do you push things through into an enterprise space? And
I love that.
I would imagine they just invest in that.
I think I'll take a very similar approach, and I think it's going to be very much a similar kind of scenario, right? We're going to continually see the trend accelerate for more and more data models, more and more computing, whatever you're going to see here. Spark has changed the game. I think Spark's about, again, don't quote me on this one, I think it's about 10, 11 years old or something like that. And Spark is everywhere. Microsoft uses it all over the place. It is in Databricks, a lot of these other data platform tools. I don't really know what Snowflake runs on, but I have to imagine it's like a flavor of Spark sitting in there somewhere. Like that technology stack has made things incredible. Two things I think I observe here. One is there's going to be more graphical interfaces, and everything I see Microsoft, mm-hmm, investing in, there's going to be more drag and drop, easy experiences. And what Microsoft is really good at doing is they're good at looking at, what are the common problems we typically have to solve? Let's go after, yeah, those common problems and make those easier for people to fix, right? And when they address that, more people can consume these other things. There will always be, I think, at some level, a deeper technology level that's happening under the hood for all of this stuff. So you're always going to need like the Greg Baldinis of the world to go rip apart these tools, figure out how they work, optimize them to some degree. But like, you know, at some level, like, I think it's going to get better. And then the only other thing I will note here is, I think the same architecture or the same playbook that Microsoft used for Power BI, right? We're going to put you on this shared infrastructure. We're going to get economy of scale by giving you this massive compute thing, but you're only paying for like a portion of that. So when Microsoft could figure out how to meter the costs for one user inside a premium tenant and understand how much Mike Carlo, you know, acquires and uses, like has, you know, has time to be able to like figure out how much he spends, and they can still make money on me at $10 a month, right? When they can look at that and say, okay, let's do that for data engineering. Let's do that for ETL pipelines. And so that's where you see like in ADF, the integrated, the integration service, which is a Microsoft managed service that's up all the time. And it just connects to things and moves data around, and it charges back to you for when that integration service ran inside Azure Data Factory. So it's more of these shared services and economy scales coming in play here. And then you're going to get a whole bunch more of like graphical interfaces as well. That's where Microsoft's going. Every company's going there. That's going to be the next 5 years. It's going to be clicky, clicky, draggy, droppy on everything.
What do you think, Tommy? I got a unique take on this, and I don't know if this is more hopeful, but something that I think I could really
everything's going to go to desktop applications for Tommy.
Yeah, so that you're going to download Azure.
Azure on your machine. And you just use it locally now.
It's on-prem only for
on-prem only.
No, honestly, I think it's going to. I think you're going to see more of the kind of the life cycle or the adoption that you've seen with Power BI for the business, where there's roles within Power BI where you have the dev, you have design, you have the business user who's playing in the platform. And I think Azure is still, to me, considered like it's for a certain group of people, right? It's not for everyone to kind of go and play around in. But I think as, and especially that article, if it's for the business, you're going to see more of that collaboration where the business user will go in to contribute to the data model, so to speak, where they're like, hey, we need these fields, select these fields. And that plays into that process. So more people are going to be playing in Azure. And again, from all aspects of the business, where
without the complexity,
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And I think too, you'll see that the whole thing that happened with Power BI, everyone played in it. All of a sudden there were issues because everyone had their own thing. And then there was that other side of the governance, because then there's going to be an Azure user group, or, you know, if those don't already exist. But seriously though, where more people have that access to this amazing platform and then can develop the skills because they have access to it, right? It's not just they can do it. It's I can play in it and I can learn about it and then I can become an expert. Like all of us, like, again,
That's also an interesting point, Tommy. Like the internet is an equalizer now, right? The amount of content I've learned about Power BI from YouTube and other people speaking about it, the information is becoming free at some level.
Like, never forget, everything we learned was online.
Yeah.
On Power BI.
Exactly. So that's huge.
But right. I did want to tie into one of your points, like, Tommy. I agree. Well, I think it's likely the interface for, you know, those extended services could come through the interface of Power BI, but that doesn't mean they're going to remove the back end pieces or have different access. So if you think about it today, like, we can access now the model behind the scenes, and we also can modify the model in the Power BI file. Right. So if you think about a lot of Microsoft tooling, they're just different avenues into the same tool sets.
That's true.
Which I do think, hopefully in my mind, bodes well to this, you know, transition of how do you get business built stuff refactored when it needs to be through in IT, because they're like, to me, that would be a really cool kind of story of utilizing these technologies to butt into that process and solve those problems that we all know we have.
Right.
And everybody's got the, like, oh my God, you just deployed a model that is
terrible.
25 gig.
That's going to happen in Azure.
And we can probably get that down to 2.
Oh, right. Yeah. Look at all these calculated columns. We'll just take those out.
Right,
and
right. Make it right. Yeah. See, boom. If you're following my advice, right? Calculated columns are everything, right?
I don't want that complexity side though, too. Yeah, right. Oh man, we played it on the user group too. So I was like, this is a direct quote. Yeah, it's unfortunately, you're gonna have to
forever out there.
Forever. Yeah. Even though I said it, but I didn't say it. But that idea of the complexity, like, make no mistake, I'm not saying it's just gonna be easy to do it. It's just you're gonna have those other avenues where I was always worried, like, wow, they're making Power BI so easy, anyone can do it. It's like, well, yes, but to your point, and no, where there's always that other side where you need that super skill.
Yeah.
And you're always adding layers to the onion, man.
They're just adding layers to
anything that we've already learned, you know?
Right. Yes. Right.
And that's that would be my one big takeaway. When you go to the lake and the cloud, all your data warehousing, Kimball, all that still applies. You're still applying it. How you do it might be slightly different.
Yeah.
Because people are like, well, it's all different now. You don't have to do any of that. No, wrong. You still need data warehousing. It's still it's a data warehouse, just like anything else is. And you've got to think about data coming in and data going out. And you got to plan for what happens in between and monitoring and quality. And like all those stuff still exists. It's just in a little bit different format now.
Yeah. Right.
Awesome. Well, I think we've done it. We've burned through another good solid hour of time with everyone. Thank you all very much. Our only ask is play our game, share our content, win some free swag. So, make sure that if you like this podcast or content or what we talk about here, please share some topics that you liked on Twitter or LinkedIn. Hashtag it with explicit measures. We'll be watching that. And then the more submissions you make, the more opportunity you'll have to win a piece of swag. You could pick what you want off of the Power BI store. Tommy, where can you find the podcast?
Yeah, quick thing with the contest too. Go back in the archives. Obviously, you can use, hey, my favorite episode was episode 96.
Or 84. Great.
Or 84. Yeah, or 84. Yeah, right. My favorites personally. But but go back in the archives. We'll give you more weight in the lottery. Probably not. Will you probably get mentioned because we don't know what we talked about in episode 22? Absolutely.
Yep.
So try to go back and, again, we want that diversity as we get near 100. As always, please listen on Apple and Spotify. Subscribe. That's where you can find all the episodes and easily listen to binge watch or listen to everything. Leave a rating. If you want to leave a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple, it helps us.
Really helps out.
And make sure to subscribe to Power BI Tips on YouTube and LinkedIn for our new episodes coming every Tuesday and Thursday.
Awesome. Well, thank you all very much. Have a great Thursday. Enjoy your snowy weather if you have snowy weather, if you're up in the north. For those of you who don't have it, you stink because you have sun and I don't. So, all right. With that, I'll see you guys next week. Cheers.